Tonight, Michelle comes to us. She had a significant date on the 16th. She's now old enough not to drink. She's got 21 years in the program. So we're very happy to be able to help her celebrate that. And she's willing to share with us. And not too long ago, she really did share where it reached me personally. She was telling my story on how I established my relationship with God. I could just see it and feel it, and I had to ask her. And just a couple of weeks ago, or maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, my sponsor's wife, Connie, had passed a message through Tim, my sponsor, recommending that we ask Michelle. And for once, I was already prepared. I said, yeah, I got her on the docket. So I'm proud to present Michelle to the Never Club.
Hi, I'm Michelle, an alcoholic. And I'm here today because I don't want to drink. And I'm kind of getting interested in the happy, joyous, and free thing, too. So I have two purposes. And two things. If this goes off, I want to be banished from the kingdom. I really don't want this to go off. I don't think it will. And second of all, I have edited out all the stuff in bad taste. So you'll be great. Yeah. Okay. You know, we have the formula and how it was. Well, for me, at 13, the lights went out. I don't know what happened. A curtain came down. And up to that point, I had had a nice little life. I was an only kid. I played outside. My parents loved me. I ate dinner. I went to school. 13, the lights went out. And I often reflect on that, like, what happened? You know, there was just no event. You know, I wasn't attacked. We didn't have a war. We didn't have a divorce in my family. I wasn't presented with a little brother. Nothing happened at all. But it happened to me. And I became very restless, irritated, and discontented at 13. And I know in hindsight that it really must have bothered my parents. But I acted out, and I started to seek out. And one of the things I started to seek out was alcohol. And I found it, and I binged on it. And I drank it whenever I could, because after all, I was still 14 or so, and I wasn't allowed to go in and out of bars and in school, etc. But I was on a mission, because it helped. It helped that whatever that thing was that went off in my head. So I continued on my path with that, and because alcohol helped me, I kept drinking it, and I drank it through high school, and I drank it through college, and I suffered the consequences until I hit my bottom. I had a lot of wreckage in relationships, in my sexual life, in my family life. I said things I regretted. I ruined businesses. I owed money. I just the mess was there. You know, and that's the part I'm going to edit out a little, because sometimes, you know, I listen to stories that either AA's give on live or on tape, and I'm just amazed. He goes, on May 26th, 1982, I was sitting in a bar, and I said to Joe, I said, I cannot remember that stuff. Something in my brain was, it's just out. I cannot remember a lot of those sequential details. So I'm not really editing out the bad stuff. I just don't remember it like that. But I remember the whole ball of wax. You know, and I know you do because I'm in the right place. So that was the bottom. And I came here and I learned how not to drink. And I was taught very well. Because I went home that day and I did not drink. And I was very happy with that. You know, once the fog cleared, that was a great relief not to have that. I never really suffered with the craving. But I also was quite complacent, and I was of the opinion, it says in the big book, thanks for the information, and I was gone. I went out to live my life, and I did. I got married, and I had a child. Well, that, there was something significant about that birth, because when I had that baby, she was a pound and a half at birth, and as most babies do, she lost some weight. And I had to start praying. I didn't use alcohol. I didn't drink. But boy, it was a very scary, scary time. And I prayed solid for 4 months. But you know, it was a prayer of, it was a foxhole prayer. It was a 4 month foxhole prayer. Because I was scared. Here was this thing. She could fit in my hand with her legs hanging down both sides. And that was my first. And she had to survive. So there were many, 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 many prayers. 4 months later, she was 4 pounds. We left the hospital. She was healthy. I got brave. I was good to go again. And I raised a family. I had 2 other kids. But that intense prayer, it was a lesson because it was prayer. And I think all prayer is valid. But the motive of the prayer was out of desperation and fear, and it was the foxhole. I recognized it at that, as that. Well, as they grew up and they went to school, I was looking forward to it. I was like, yeah, I'm going to like live my life now. They're in school. I can, whatever I'm going to do, I'm not really sure. I can work, get a career, start a business, blah, blah, blah. I can hang out. No drinking. But in all that time, I had also, in my complacency, forgot to go to meetings. Didn't get a sponsor. I did not work the steps. I had no sponsees. I didn't read the big book. It was on a shelf. I could see it. It was blue, and it had a thin film of dust on the top of it. It was there, you know, but I didn't read it. I didn't pray. I didn't meditate. I didn't call you guys. I was just sober. And then I got really sober without recovery, and I began again to act out. I didn't like the way you were acting, and I told you. And I didn't like how the kids were acting, and I hit them. And I got rage. And my character defect started to blossom. When they blossomed into that feeling that, you know what? I need to die, it caught my attention. Because I could feel that vortex, I could feel that momentum of going down, and I didn't know how to stop it. I'd been there with that bottom of using, but I wasn't using, and somehow in that fog, again, I had a moment of clarity, go back to AA. And I went back to AA. I did. I was a mess. I was a real mess. It's like, you have how many years? Ooh, don't share. You know, I was, but I had lots of time. You know, it was just, it was the same thing, but without the booze. And that was almost worse, because I didn't have anything to cover it up with. I wasn't drunk. And I yanked this lady up, my sponsor lady, Barbara. I took her. Barbara, we need to do the steps. We did the steps. She became my sponsor. And fortunately, she was thorough, and she encouraged me to be so, and to be honest. And I was so desperate. She said, jump. I jumped higher. She said, do it. I said, I'll do it again. I just did that step work. I really, and that gift of desperation was actually good. Because I didn't balk. There was absolutely no balking. It was a straight shot. It was a straight shot. And the other good thing about that was at the end of that, that time that I had amassed, even though I hadn't participated in my recovery, when I finished that 12 step and I closed that book, I got that balloon payment. That feeling of relief and the sobriety behind it kind of came all into one great moment. And I knew I had done something extremely important, that finally I could say I was recovering now. I wasn't just sober. So that was my second bottom, really. That was an important, dangerous, desperate, fruitful bottom. And I'm glad I survived it. I am very grateful that I didn't pick up. There's absolutely no reason in the world why I didn't pick up, except for grace. And so I got sponsees. And I really felt like I had completed some kind of circle here. You know, I had done my steps. I had kind of flushed out all those resentments and fears, as the steps can do so perfectly. And I was really ready to enjoy now. I was getting ready to be complacent again. But there were other plans in store. And one of the things that happened is, oddly enough, I started to have problems with some of those bugaboo character defects I had before. That rage kept popping up again. And it was puzzling, because I'd say to my sons, I'd say, Barbara, I've done this work. I wrote about this. What is going on? And to get to the point where, you know, you've exhausted every phone call, you've called everybody, your sponsors talked to you 5 times, you've called a prayer line, what is it? Oh, God. That was the last place to go. So I realized I had listened to people sharing in meetings, and they talked about a God that was personal to them. A God that they could access at any time. I thought, that's odd. What do you mean, access it at any time? Well, that's what we do. You know, I'm feeling a little this, I'm feeling a little that, I'm feeling squirrely. I just contact my higher power and I do that. Well, I didn't have that kind of relationship. I didn't have that kind of conversation. I didn't have that kind of access. I just didn't have that in my thought pattern. And I knew my sponsor did, and you know, I knew it worked for her, and she seemed very happy with that. And these character defects, which now I was trying to run through the steps again, you know, I said to myself, well, I need to really start looking more at this conversation that folks say they have with their higher powers. And I started to get into my prayer meditation. For 5 years, I went into the bathroom in the morning, and I closed the door, and I sat on the commode, and I went, five, I'm out. That was my meditation. That was all I could do. I couldn't do anymore. My mind would not allow me to do anymore. One of my assets, though, is tenacity, and I didn't let go of that bone. I kept that five meditation going every morning for 5 years, and I broke through it. I broke through it. I broke through it because I read a story in the grapevine about a lady that did a 45-minute meditation. I went, a what? Ugh. And I just went in that bathroom. I closed that door, and I did 30 minutes, and it was great. It was great. So my persistence, my tenacity, not so much my intellectual know-how, got me through and got me, whatever the opposite of a bottom is, to a next one. And that became my big tool because, you know, my prayer had been, God, reveal yourself to me. I don't know what this God is. I didn't come in with, excuse those who come in as Catholic, you know, recovering Catholics. I was not a recovering Catholic. I didn't have any concept, maybe a little anger around it. But I knew I had been struck sober, and I knew I had that feeling after those 12 steps. So something was at work, and I couldn't disbelieve all the AAs whose sobriety and recovery I heard and respected, and who were comfortable. They were really comfortable, and they were happy. You know, I really couldn't deny that was going on. So I started to find out how to get to this God and what it was going to be to me. And so the prayer and meditation was one thing. And then taking other women through the steps was another thing. I could feel that was working in me, but that still wasn't that communication thing that people said they had. And I had to read a lot of things in this, but one thing that I really appreciate my sponsor suggested to me was when I read my reading in the evening on page 86, But I also pick out arbitrarily a page in the big book and just read it. And she said, the reason I'm asking you to do that is you will gain familiarity with the big book without even trying. Just put the paragraph and read it. Because she had a working knowledge of the book, and I wondered how she'd gotten that. So I started to do that. And when I started to do that, it seemed that I started to pick up a lot of little phrases around what this meant to the writers, what God meant to the writers. Some of it I could use right away. Some of it, I don't know. He even talks about Christ in here, which is certainly an outside issue, but he talks about it. He mentions it. And the stuff about, you know, I have to have something that's going to solve all my problems. Because now the drink was not a problem, really. You know, as long as I said every morning, keep me away from a drink, I felt like my back was covered. I didn't have a craving. The problem had been removed. It really had. But the problems, what about this? And what about that? And what about Joey and Susie Q? You know, those were still things that I couldn't quite get a handle on. Then I read stuff like, a price had to be paid. And that was the destruction of self-centeredness. What does that mean? Stuff like, oh, well, if you just step out of the way, you'd feel better. That was some kind of contortion trick I could not figure out. What does that really mean? But then again, they're coming from people who have obviously lived this, and I can see results. So I needed to demonstrate. I needed to demonstrate in my own thinking. And I came to realize after reading that page 86 over and over and over and over again, this is where it resides. It's not your fault that I'm angry. It's not your fault that I'm lonely. It's not your fault that I'm this. This is where it's residing. This is the center, the nerve center. And this is where my deep unhappiness coming from, the thinking. And I said, wow, you know, there's so much about thinking. There's directions about my thinking. Do this, do that, ask him for this, thoughts, intuition, you know, in your prayer, every step of the way. Well, wait a minute, I was praying in the morning and in the evening, but I wasn't, what's this stuff about every step in the day? I didn't get that. So I started saying, well, I'll do noon, breakfast, I'll put them three prayers. Okay, that's good. Then I went, no, but I need it in between. So I said, well, I'm gonna insert this thing in my day. I'm gonna pray without ceasing. You're not gonna know about it. I mean, I'm gonna pray with you in meetings, or if I'm with my sponsor. But I'm just gonna do it all the time. See what happens. I couldn't do it. Get home at night, man, I forgot to ask for intuitive thought. I'm struggling with that. So slowly and slowly and slowly, I'm realizing that this is my path. That was what happened. What happened, what it's like now. I realized that one of my biggest blocks was trust. I don't trust God. Thy will be done. Okay. With a big yes, but I didn't trust that God would do the right thing. That he would give me what I really wanted. That you said, oh well, if you don't get what you want, you'll get something better. I didn't believe that. I didn't trust. I didn't want to step out on that. Couldn't be better than what I thought it. I was still limited. I thought I knew better. That was defining my self-centeredness. And through a series of events, I decided I had to. I had to trust this thing. It centered around that. I was working really hard on recognizing my stinking thinking. But in the end, who was going to remove it? Who was going to create my day? What was my vision going to be? It's going to be God's vision, and I'll take the back seat. I'll enjoy the ride. I mean, all these pithy statements that we hear, now I had to do it. Because right on the heel of that were those same damn uncomfortable fears and angers and doubts. Doubt. You told me I was an agnostic. I didn't know I was an agnostic. I never really used the word. So again, I'm confronted with my agnosticism. I have to trust. I had to read things like, and the only reason I found this page was she had me read page 86 so much I said, heck, I'm going to read 68. And on page 68 was, perhaps there's a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity? I would just bathe my mind in these kind of words. And somehow, even if on the first day I didn't believe it, I think it sinks in. This is not only my roadmap. This is my living and breathing. You know, it's not that I want God to give me what I want or what God has. God is what I need. God is what I have. That's what I need. The other stuff goes to the side. Humility. You know, that's my right size to God. And when I keep that in mind, I don't have to practice humility. I just have to think, oh, and I get that proportion right away. That helps me. But trust has been hard for me to get, and it's only come again by pain. I hate to have to say that. It's not very glorious. But that's how it's come. Sobriety is just a little too tight and not happy enough. And just, I guess when you have kids and they get to be 20 and they leave, there's no control. I mean, there's no control issue over that. You know, I can't say, well, Zachary's in Chicago and I have a handle on what he's doing. I don't know where he is, what he's doing, who he's with. So once again, not only do I pray for my son, but I have to turn God. I have to turn him over to God. And I have to trust that God is doing the right thing. God is taking care of it. That helps me. And once I do that, I'm okay. Because I believe that the depth of my anxiety measures my distance from God. So when I'm churning and reading you the Riot Act, and I'm upset, and I can't sleep at night, I know exactly what's wrong. And the deeper I go, and the worse I feel, the farther I am. So, I know what to do. Chuck that. Get in. This helps me. These kind of words help me. There's another great passage here, because in this book, whoever wrote it, Bill and whoever, knew that we needed a lot of Christmas presents. We needed a lot of promises. I need a lot of promises. It says here, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. That comes down to one thing. Do I believe that or not? If I don't believe it, I'm going to suffer. If I believe it, I feel good. It's such an easy choice for me. So I chuck in the towel. I say, hey, all I really wanted to ever do was feel good. That was the whole point of drinking. And I'm still kind of the same formula. I still want to feel good. Things like that help me. They give me hope. They allow me to trust. And when you say it's going to get better than what I planned, and I do that, and it demonstrates, and it really is better than I planned, then I'm in. Because it's been demonstrated. And I need that. This isn't theory now. It's like, as like I can touch this, it happened. Better than what I wanted, than I planned, than my vision. So check my vision. If that's what I'm going to get, why not? My sponsor said to me, well, if I do that, where am I? It's all going to be God's vision. What about my vision? The lump on the lot syndrome? I said, well, you've done it your way, and you're still bottom feeding. Why don't you just try this once? If it doesn't work, go back. Just like the drinking. No, you know, I have places to go, people to meet, I got plans, they're big. I know what I want. I really want it. And he's not going to let me have it. I have certainly identified with that. But I got tired of it. I really do want the things I want. And if he's going to give it to me and it's better, I'm going to do it. Remembering that this was the entity that got me sober. That got me rid of my fears and resentments. So, the last thing I want to read is something that really speaks to me too. And, you know, I've gone from zero, which was kind of what I was when I came into the program. And I've gone like 180 degrees. I'm so opposite. I'm so opposite. My thoughts, my feelings, my life. I don't know how different it is out there, but it is very different here. So now to complete the circle, there's another 180 degrees for 360. So I knew how bad it could get. I proved that with my 25 years of drinking, with my descent into alcoholism. But now I'm saying, how good can it get? You know, could it really get a little better in the next 180 degrees to finish this 360? That's a possibility. That is very different from the Four Horsemen, Michelle. That is really different thought for me to actually entertain how good could it get. But that comes from demonstration. You know, God for me isn't some airy fairy theory. It is as real as this podium. This paragraph reminds me, and we read it in some meetings. You know, I think before I read it, that part of how good can it get is my concept of heaven. You know, we all have concepts of heaven, and definitely the old horse they trotted out with something on the clouds. But now it's come to mean something very different with this path in AA, and that is the consciousness of the presence of God. I mean the consciousness like right now. May you find him here. It says it in the opening. So what reason do I have to believe that he's not here right now? And that's heaven. I don't have to wait. It says, this to the end, that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. Thanks for trusting me. It didn't go off.
Center tradition states that there are no dues or fees for AA membership, but generous contributions help this group and AA Central at Zoom. And I've asked Julie to hand out the chips.
I am an alcoholic. Do I have to get it from there?
You can or not, as you wish.
I don't really do.
Okay.
We have a chip system. And we're going to give, I'm just going to talk to them one time and offer them at the same time. We have a white chip for anybody who wants to join our way of life for the first time or wants to pick one up for having tried our. Catherine, y'all. Anybody else want a white chip? Her head did not pop off. She's still alive. So if you want one, I'll leave it up here. We have a silver chip for 30 days. Anybody have 30 days? We have a red chip for 90 days. Anybody have 90 days?
There we go.
And see, his head is still connected to his body, so that's all good. Anybody else need a red chip for 90 days? Okay, a yellow chip marks 6 months. 6 months? 9 months? Anybody have 9 months? I know I've got one birthday, but do we have any others that we don't know about? Any other birthday? All right, well, I do have the privilege of giving Michelle her chip. So where is she? Where is she going? Michelle's right in front of you. How old am I? The alternate head. Off. And her head is not popped off, but actually got put back on. Y'all didn't see that. But so like she just said, she has 21 years, and she came, started coming to the 9:30, which is my home group, I don't know how long ago, a year maybe? Less than a year? But, you know, she just opened her mouth, and I immediately thought, wow, this lady knows her stuff. And not because she's read it, because she's actually done it and lived it. And you can feel that when she shares. She's one of the most spiritually connected people I know. I love calm people. She's very calm and steady. You know, she never lets you see her duck feet under the water. You know, who knows what's going on underneath the water. But I know that I like what I see when I and I like what I hear when she shares. So, there's Michelle.
Thank you. Thank you.
How old?
Tell my story again.
How old?
I was 21.
That's right.
Congratulations. Thanks for being here for us. Okay, it's time for AA announcements. How's your chance? Got anything, Tim?
No, I'm Tim Alcoholic.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And, Debbie, your home group's Wednesday nights? Yeah. And on July 5th, we've got Larry Kay, Sober Since 79, member of the early morning study group. So ask around, and somebody will probably break his anonymity, but we should have a pretty good crowd for that one, too. Also, we have a person that's active. Or has been active in the Monday night speakers meeting as far as supporting it, coming to listen to the speakers, has told his story. His name is Charles. And this last week, it's been a miracle, really. He's had a transplant in Piedmont Hospital, a new liver, a new kidney. Removed his gallbladder, and that was Saturday morning, and he's taking visitors. They've got him on solid food, and he's walking, and they plan on sending him home this weekend. So he made it look routine, and we've asked many of you for prayers for Charles, and I guess it works. That's that. He is a miracle. Anything else?
My name is Henry. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, Henry. And some people might know we're not aloof. Kind of a dark Indian guy. Professor at Georgia State, he and I, Don Sears, hang around a lot. He passed away Friday night of a heart attack. And I don't know when the memorial's going to be, but they'll be one sometime.
Debbie, I'm an alcoholic. The memorial for Alok is Saturday at 11:30, from 11:30 to 2:30 at the Bombay Palace on Briarfoot next to Target. And there'll be a Indian food. And I'm sure you know him, you just don't know that you know him, but it would be really nice to pay your respects to the ex-wife and his son to be here. Thanks.
And that's Saturday? This Saturday?
It's coming Saturday.
At what time?
We have a lot of sobriety on Alok. Yes.
What time?
11:30, 2:30, Bombay Palace.
Bombay Palace.
On Saturday.
Okay, great. I'm glad that was shared. So, if there's nothing else, I'd like to remind everybody that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And for those who will, please join us in the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen. He's coming back. It works.
I'm on top of it. Please.
Yeah.
I'll pay double for it. That's great.
Double? How about triple?
Okay, you go. Whatever you say.
Great job.
The baskets never made it where we were.
They didn't?
Where's the money?
Well,
is that it? Is that all you got?
Yeah, so far. Yes, Tim should have it.
Oh, okay.